Good morning. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock. Is that Dave Brubeck? Nice. We're starting our Sunday morning with some nice jazz. That's always fun. Ryan is at the helm this morning. I'm probably getting everybody's name wrong. It's Ryan, right?
You nailed it, Susie.
Ryan Perpich.
Correct.
Ah. Not related to Rudy Perpich.
Well, there is some relation. Yes.
I knew that there probably was. That's a very famous Minnesota name.
Well, I'm trying to be less infamous. Yeah, I'd rather take famous than infamous, I suppose.
I suppose. Well, you're at the helm for Josh. I'm at the helm for Al Schock. And I'm also at the helm for me. But we're going to have a fun morning. We really are. I had a chance early. I'm just going to lay this out here for folks. Because we talk about all things health, mental health, physical health, what you're eating, lots of things relating to your health. And mental health is a pretty big part of our lives as we do our best to do good in life and be nice to people. And we're going to continue with that theme of kind of your health in terms of how much social media do you allow yourself? How much do you allow your kids? I want to talk a little bit more with a person that I've already talked to about this, because it was so fascinating that sometimes you just want to talk about a story for longer than 45 seconds. So in less than a year, a new law in Minnesota will require social media platforms to have a mental health warning label. And in studio is David Nathan, a psychologist with Alina Health and a professor at University of St. Thomas. Good morning. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning, Susie. Thank you for having me.
Great. I want you to pull that microphone right up to your mouth just so you...
Like, how's that?
Perfect.
All
oh,
right.
My God. That sounds so much better.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about this. We got warning labels on cigarettes and vapes and warning labels. This is a new kind of warning label. Talk about what it's designed to do and what it will say.
Yeah, I think this is a new kind of label, and I think it's kind of similar to the warning labels on cigarette packs, and it's supposed to raise awareness that these products are incredibly addictive, that they have negative health impacts, including depression, anxiety, in some cases increases risks of suicidality. So this is very, very, very serious stuff. And previously, these things weren't we talk about them, but I think they're trying to make trying to increase the awareness of these issues for users as they're using these products.
We want to make sure people listening have the opportunity to jump in as well, because we get a lot of listener involvement in this hour. 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. As we talk about social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I mean, I'm not even saying all of them. There's so many.
So many.
How about just being on playing games on your phone? You know, because a lot of people just love, myself included, I like the word games, you know, where you pick the, like, and then solitaire. So is it all kind of lumped into the same category, sort of being addicted to your phone?
I think there is this concept of screen addiction, and it's kind of an umbrella term. There's so many different kinds of activities, and I think something you bring up, all these different social media apps, and so many different kinds of games. They're so sophisticated now. A lot of people don't realize that the biggest users of video games today are actually women. And they're playing games like Candy Crush. They're playing games like Solitaire. They're doing these things on their phone. So often when we think of people who are playing video games, we're thinking of teenagers or maybe 20-something guys, you know, hanging out with their friends or maybe, you know, in their room playing video games on like an Xbox. That is not the biggest user of video games anymore. But different groups of people play different kinds of games, and the systems are very well designed to kind of pull people in and extract money from them. So yeah, there's a lot, and then we're talking about social media and things like that. So there's a lot of stuff that fits under that umbrella, and these systems kind of gather information about what do people like, and they incorporate that information in the social media, the streams of information and the stories we see, and then also in how the games are designed to keep people playing and ideally keep people spending money on these products.
And not sleeping.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, that is one of them. Yes. Yes. We can definitely talk about that. Absolutely. Yeah. Or eating or going to the bathroom or spending time with friends or doing jobs. Yeah.
Oh,
all kinds of stuff.
Golly. Because there's so much to talk about here. And again, I really want people to jump in at 651 461-9226, read a Pew Research Center survey of U.S. teenagers 13 to 17 found 48% say social media has mostly a negative effect on people their age, up from 32% in 2022. And is that more about, I look at Snapchat, I think Snapchat is the dumbest social media platform in the history of mankind. And I go on record saying that because there's no point. They just take a picture. Have you, you know what I mean? They go when they purse.
I have a friend named Linda who's also a psychologist, and she thinks there should be a special sub diagnosis of PTSD specifically related to Snapchat.
Has no purpose.
Makes life worse. Yes,
I've asked young people.
Very popular. Very, very, very popular, and it makes people miserable.
And I really, 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 really have asked people, young people. What is this? I don't understand. There's no message. And they're like, well, yeah, you're just saying hi with your face, with your lips all pursed out. I mean, how about making a phone call? Wouldn't that be funny?
Right, yeah. And I think this speaks to the different generations and the different ways that people use products, because I think the younger generations, Gen Z, Gen Alpha.
What's Gen Alpha?
Oh, that's my kids, the 12-year-olds.
Okay.
Yeah, so these different people use these things different ways. My daughter's the idea of using of calling someone on the phone. I mean, it's like using a telegraph. It's just not something that's done. It's like, huh, that's an interesting, quaint idea. Like, what are you talking about? You know, like this is kind of Jurassic Park dinosaur kind of stuff to them.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, yeah.
And also, we talked about on the phone just how fast everything's changing.
Yes.
You know, that what... And as a psychologist, as maybe a sociologist looks ahead, like what kind of a society will we become if this continues to sort of debilitate us in terms of communicating verbally? You know what I'm saying? Like, are we just going to become silent bots that...
I think there's a lot of really big questions. There's a lot of really big questions. And that's one of the things, I mean, I think there's a lot of sources of stress in our lives right now. And one of the things the human brain really likes is predictability and familiarity. And we do not have that right now. You know, I grew up in the 80s, the 90s, and I remember being there for the internet revolution in the 90s and kind of thinking, like, I don't know what's going to happen next, but it's going to be amazing, you know, and kind of, we don't know what's going to happen. And I think right now there isn't that same sense of the future is going to be so much better than it is right now. There's kind of like, what's going to happen? And things could get bad. And are there guardrails? And it seems like some things I thought there were guardrails for, there aren't guardrails for. So what's going to happen? And I think that is a concern. It's really hard to know. There's so many industries, education, you know, you can't really assign papers to kids anymore because kid can go into ChatGPT. A student can go into ChatGPT and say, hey, I'm reading Democracy in America by de Tocqueville. Write me 5 pages on why this is, you know, an important book in American history. And in 2 seconds, the computer will print out a 5-page paper. Or not print out, but it'll show you on your screen a 5-page paper on de Tocqueville. Wow. And it's extremely difficult for teachers to know, did the student write this or did this come from AI?
I think they should require students to hand write in cursive, something they probably also don't know anything about.
Yeah, my daughters know cursive, but it's because Laura and I taught them cursive. And it's kind of like, oh, this is so cool if you're going to write like thank you notes or something like that, which is another kind of quaint idea.
That's sort of, yeah.
Right. If you want to write invitations to your friends for your birthday party, you can write in cursive and make it look fancy. But yeah, that's kind of another older skill.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take our first break. It is 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. Hope you're having a good morning. It's a bit stormy out there. A bit gray, a bit humid. If you're in the southern part of the metro, it's raining, some flood warnings down to southern Minnesota. But we're going to continue on this morning talking about social media addiction. It is a health concern. Some would call it a crisis. It's 19 past 7, 651-461-9226. Call or text with your questions back after this. Well, that's a pleasant little Sunday morning jingle. Ryan Perpich is helping us this morning as Josh Wheeler's off, and he's selecting various musical interludes to get us through the morning. It is Sunday morning. Love to have you with us, 651-461-9226. We're happy to have you in studio. It's so fun to have people in studio. David Nathan is a psychologist with Alina and a professor at University of St. Thomas. We're talking about social media. 651-461-9226. Social media addiction, particularly. And you and I had a chance to interview David a couple weeks ago, and I thought this topic really, really, really deserved more time. And we are getting some text questions in, so I'll get to a few of them. This texter writes this morning, I don't use any social media, and I am very happy, and ignorance is bliss. There's some truth to that, to shutting it off.
Yeah, I think there's a great deal of research now. Social media is subtle, but it changes over time. And one of the things that's going on right now is that, and this has kind of always gone on, it's become much stronger. The software that runs social media is designed to increase what's called engagement. They want people to stay on social media. They want people to stay on Instagram and Facebook and all these other apps. They want you to stay on these sites as long as possible because they're showing you ads. Every time they show someone ads, they make money. And sadly, one of the things they found is that if you show people if you show people content that makes them upset, you know, it's like, oh, your political party is horrible. Look what these other people say about you, things like that. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, and then people get engaged and stuff like that. It makes people's blood pressure rise. You know, it's really, they've really found that, hey, man, our the best way that we can keep people on as long as possible is make people upset. And I think a lot of people don't realize that this is 100% by design. Showing people comments from other people and sometimes one of the things that's come up now, it's not even other people are making this. They have AI bots that are saying things. I saw a story recently about how there was a web community, I think it was on Facebook or something like that, for like Dakota County. And there was a posting about what's the worst restaurant? What are the 10 worst restaurants in the area? And someone researched this and like, this isn't even a real person who posted this. This is just kind of a software that wrote this question. And people are getting into fights in the comment section. And I think, unfortunately, that is where we are right now. So I think there's some definite pros to social media. But I think people need to be really aware of how this software works and how it's trying to get us to spend more time on there, often by doing things that is not in our best interest.
651-461-9226. We're talking about social media addiction. And a texter writes, it really is, this is something I asked about. How do you know you're addicted?
That's an excellent, excellent question.
Because I think I'm addicted. No, really.
I think,
get a good feeling when I play.
Sure. I think that is a really, really good question. And I think there's a difference between enjoying our time when we're doing something and actually being addicted. So when it comes to addiction and mental health, we're talking about activities that we don't get the same amount of pleasure from doing it. We have to do more and more of it to get the same amount of pleasure. We are neglecting other parts of our lives. We're not getting our chores done. We're not going to work. We're not going to sleep. We're not spending time with friends, things like that. So the activity that we're doing is kind of pushing out other activities. You know, maybe we used to play solitaire for, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour, you know, a day or something like that. And suddenly we look at our phones and says, oh, you know, you've been on your phone for an average of like 7 or 8 hours, you know, per day. And if you kind of dig into it, it's like, I've been playing, you know, these games, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. That's part of how this works. Our memory is very, very interesting. There's certain things, if something's really rough, we tend to remember that. Some things that are kind of fun and enjoyable, we don't tend to remember those things. So there are a lot of times when people are like, oh, yeah, I was on my phone probably like half an hour or two yesterday. And then you like, well, let's look at the software that tells us, you know, what were you doing at the screen time settings? And say, oh, I was actually doing that thing for 3 hours yesterday, and I didn't even realize it yet. And that's part of how our brains work. We don't necessarily remember those pleasant things, or when we kind of get into a zone, when we're in the zone, we don't realize how long we've been there.
Man, I know whenever I get my little report for how much screen time I've had, I'm like, you're lying.
Right, yeah.
I wasn't really on for 6 hours.
It's amazing. It's amazing, yeah.
And when we're talking about screen time, because a couple of folks are texting in and it's kind of what social media they use, what they're on. And Mary from Minnetonka uses Facebook, Instagram, playing Candy Crush and Solitaire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's about mine. I think I also do those, not so much Instagram. I don't do Candy Crush, but so one solution, which I tried for about 2 days, but then I hated it, is I left my phone downstairs and didn't have it with me when I went upstairs to sleep. And that's addiction when you can.
Well, there's gradations of addiction, though, too. But kind of having that sense of withdrawal, it would definitely be kind of a indicate that your brain is used to this, and not having it around feels uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. So is that maybe a good idea, though, to get yourself off it if you feel like it's, even if you don't feel like there's an issue, maybe you just want to taper off a little bit.
I think moderation is really the key for a lot of these things. I do presentations on screen addiction around the country, and I don't think we can try and tell ourselves or our kids, you can't play video games, you can't be on screens. I think that ship has sailed. This is so much part of our culture and what you need to do. You know, you can't go to, I just talked to my friend Logan yesterday, went to a concert last night, and you can't, they don't have tickets for concerts anymore. You know, you have to have the Ticketmaster app on your phone, and you show your phone to the people and they scan it in. I mean, maybe, and I'm sure they've got to probably pay an extra fee or something like that if you want to have like a actual physical ticket to things. So I think really the key is us being aware of how we're using social media and tracking it. I've got a good friend, his name is, Dan Kessler, Dr. Daniel Kessler, also a psychologist at Allina. And he talks about one of the things that he noticed in his 20s, if he was trying to lose weight or kind of trying to keep an eye on how he was doing, if he wrote down what he was eating, he was much more aware of how much he'd eaten that day. And he'd noticed when he didn't do that, he tended to eat other things. So I think there's something about just kind of being more aware of how much screen time we've had. And like, oh, yeah, look at that. This is how much time I have been on today. I think that can help us, too.
Is there an advisable time to use social media? Like, okay, if you use social media 2 to 3 hours a day, that's a healthy zone. If you use it 7 to 8 hours a day, that's probably unhealthy.
Well, I think for me, the way I look at it is that we're talking about, this is part of our lives. So if we're on vacation, you know, the amount of time we're kind of kicking back and watching TV or you know, not working, that's going to be a very different situation. If we're busy at school, if it's finals week in college or something like that, we're probably gonna have a lot less time to do recreational activities. So I think it depends on how's the rest of our life going. Are we getting our jobs done? Are we getting are we doing well at work? Are we having time with our friends? Or do we have kind of a healthy blend of things? And I think that kind of changes day in and day out. But I think as long as all those other things are taken care of and when we're healthy in all those other areas, you know, you can kind of use as much screen time as you want. I don't think there's a hard number of hours to use. I think it's kind of, are you in balance with other parts of your life?
And we can get into that more, like when people do move into the trouble area. We're
sure
going to take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll give folks a check of the weather forecast. 651-461-9226. My screen time report, this texter writes, says I listen to WCCO way too much. Never. All right, we're back after this. There's Ryan Perpich. He's at the helm this morning giving us some beautiful music to get in the groove. Chuck Mangione. We had John Coltrane. Who was first?
We had Brubeck first, then Vince Guaraldi, and now we're going down to Chuck Mangione.
Man.
I know.
The hits. All right. Thank you for listening this morning. Thank you, Ryan, for the music, and thank you, David Nathan, for coming in studio. David is a psychologist with Allina Health and a graduate of University of St. Thomas. I made him a professor last hour, but that's all right. I like giving promotions to people. And we're talking about social media addiction, screen addiction, and what you can do about it and how potentially dangerous it can be to folks. And I guess you mentioned balance earlier. When do you know you're in trouble? When is, you know, with kids and stuff?
And I think that's one of the most insidious things about addiction. Our ability to deceive ourselves is extremely well developed. There's one aspect of addiction, whether we're talking about alcoholism or drug abuse or all kinds of other things, gambling, is the sense that I'm not addicted. I could stop at any time if I wanted to. So it becomes, sometimes it's people around us who kind of observe like, wow, you know, you are losing all this money. You're spending all this time doing this, you know, blah, 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 blah. So that is one of the real problems. A lot of times people who are really, really suffering from addiction have no understanding that that's the case. They feel like they're in complete control. But I would say if we're noticing, hey, you know what, compared to where I was, you know, a couple of months ago, a year ago, I'm not doing so well at school. I'm not doing so well at work. I'm not spending nearly as much time with friends. I've got those dishes are in the sink and they've been sitting there. I got flies flying around them, things like that. You know, if we're kind of noticing, kind of compared to ourselves, that things we used to be on top of, we're not on top of anymore. I think that's a good indicator.
And when you talk about suicidal ideology,
yeah,
where does that come in and how does that fit into this picture?
So one of the problems with, and I think I should also say, like alcohol, some people are, just because of the way their brain chemistry works, they are far more likely to become alcoholics than other people. That's just kind of the hand of cards that they got dealt by their genes. Some people can be on screens a lot, and this is just their means of communication, and they can step away from it. Other people, they really, really are impacted, and they get pulled in. So I think it's there's going to be some variation, but one of the things that can happen is when people become addicted, often addiction I have a really good friend who is a recovering alcoholic, and he says, you know, alcohol was never the problem. Alcohol was always the solution to a bigger problem. Usually when people are engaged in addictive behaviors, this is a coping mechanism to help block out misery and sadness and despair and hopelessness from other areas or one big area of their life. So this feels much better for them. But the problem is those problems continue in those other areas of life. Those problems continue to build and build and build and build. And, there can get to be a point where someone feels that there's no way to go forward, and obviously that is absolutely mental illness. There are options, there are ways to get through these things, but our brains can convince us that that we're stuck and nothing will ever get better. And I would say if you know anyone like that, or if you have thoughts like that, you know, there are services available, and everyone deserves to have access to those services. But that absolutely can happen. Unfortunately, that often happens to teenagers. Teenagers and 20-somethings are the highest risk. There's a lot of really, really sad and damaging data that looks at how dangerous and how much misery these products have. And I would like to think inadvertently, because we weren't fully aware of how these things worked, but how much damage this has caused, especially teenagers and 20-somethings in our country.
And when you say damage, I always think about, you know, back to the Snapchat, back to the photos that are taken, and how just social media, even for older people, when you see a picture of a party that you weren't invited to.
Oh, absolutely,
if
yeah.
You see someone in a outfit that's really cute and you immediately say, oh my gosh, I'm a loser. I don't have that cute clothes. I'm a loser. They didn't invite me to that party. Is that sort of also feed into that negative self-talk?
Absolutely, yeah. And so there's so many layers to this, because people will take, you know, 500 pictures of themselves. I remember our neighbor across the street is a professional photographer, and she had a daughter, and her daughter showed her a picture of a famous actress, and it's like, oh, this is me just getting out of bed. And her daughter was, I think, 14 years old when she showed this picture. And the mom's like, okay, I'm a professional photographer. I can tell you 50 different ways that this is not a picture that someone just took of them getting out of bed. I can tell you about all the different ways this is staged. But her 14-year-old daughter had no idea. And I guess me as an adult, I don't have the knowledge of being a photographer, and I would kind of guess that, like, yeah, this person's saying they're just getting out of bed. You know, I don't fully believe it, but who knows? But I think a lot of us don't have that specific knowledge, and children and teenagers are much more likely to just kind of accept what's proposed to them.
As reality,
right. Yeah. So we have people who are taking lots of pictures and they post the very best one, but we also have another layer, which is that the software can detect the moods. And this is 10 years ago, the software could detect the moods that we're in and say, oh, like the software, I mean, obviously it doesn't have feelings, but it doesn't really know, but it kind of like, it's able to kind of, say like, oh, this person's kind of spending more time looking at this story or spending more time looking at this picture. I'm going to show it more content based on the person's mood to kind of keep them in that zone where they're going to stay here. And unfortunately, Being sad, having negative feelings is one of the things that makes people more likely to stick around on social media. So you have this product that there is there just to make money. Like it is there just to sell ads or make people or get people to buy products and things like that. That's how they make money. And they're okay making people unhappy if that means they make more money. So these people are not our friends. These people are not our friends. And they kind of have it so that individuals are creating the vast majority of the content on these products. So it's a pretty great business to be in, you know, if you don't mind the fact that you're making people very, very sad.
And maybe even killing people.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible. 651-461-9226. If you have a comment, maybe you want to jump in, maybe you have a question. This is pretty important and serious stuff, and I think we do not really pay enough attention to it, I think.
Is incredibly powerful. It's incredibly powerful. It's like understanding the economy or understanding, you know, all kinds of these big forces that we don't realize that impact our lives, but decisions that people make far away can profoundly impact, you know, the price of gas and the price of food at the grocery store. And, you know, we get to the grocery store and, we are using these social media products and we don't necessarily realize that what's going on in our lives is being impacted by kind of how these systems are designed. And it impacts our lives.
What do we know about these software programmers? I mean, are there hundreds, thousands of them? Do you know much about that side of it? Or don't know. I just seems like, where are they, in a castle somewhere?
Well, I think many years ago, I was at this really wonderful developmental psychology conference. I work primarily with children and adolescents. And I was at this great conference in California, and there were people from all over the country there, and I kind of met up with folks from San Jose, Silicon Valley, and I was talking to them and said, you know, we have all kinds of problems with kids in Silicon Valley. A lot of them feel like if I'm not a millionaire, if I haven't started a cool startup by the time I'm 18, I'm like a failure. You know, if I don't get into an Ivy League school and get some amazing education, you know, I'm never going to make it in my life. You know, so there's all this kind of perfectionism and high pressure and things like that. We have huge issues with these kids who just can't accept themselves unless they have certain accomplishments. One problem we don't have is we have no screen addiction, because this, again, 10 years ago, their parents won't let them anywhere near a computer. They won't let them anywhere near a smartphone. They won't let them anywhere near a tablet. They'll let them, you know, write their papers on a computer, but they're not letting them play video games. They don't have Xboxes. Mm. And I thought, wow, is that informative? You know, to find out that the people who work in these industries don't let their kids anywhere near it. There's a famous interview with Steve Jobs, and I don't remember if it was the iPhone or an iPad when it first came out. Someone can find it on YouTube, and said, you know, I think he had like a niece or a daughter, and he's like, oh, I bet your niece can't wait, or your daughter can't wait to play with this. And he's like, oh, my niece isn't going anywhere near this. And it's like, uh-oh, he said it out loud on this national interview. But I think there are people all over the world that work on these products. I think there's companies all over. But one of the things that's really interesting is every once in a while you see an editorial in a big newspaper or, you know, on WCCO or something like that, where someone says, oh my gosh, I worked for this company and we made this product and it was so addictive and I made so much money and now I feel horrible that we made this thing, because we basically made this thing that's super addictive. And, you know, now I'm going to give a great deal of the money that I made away to these various nonprofits because I feel so horrible about what I did. And I think different people have different ideas about these things, but I think there is a lot of awareness by the programmers that what they're making is very, very addictive, and it makes a lot of people very unhappy.
Ugh. Spooky. All right, it is 7:45 on WCCO on this Sunday morning. We're talking about social media addiction, 651-461-9226, screen addiction. And maybe you're going through it. Maybe you want to talk about it. Maybe you want to share if you're doing something different. 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. Boy, you are digging back into the files, hitting all the big ones. This is Glenn Miller, In the Mood. Love it. Well, this is our health hour. We're having a good morning. Ryan Perpich, somewhere a relation to Rudy Perpich, famous Minnesota family. Also famous, David Nathan, Alina Health, a psychologist. We're talking about social media addiction. And I would like to invite Kathy, who is calling with a question from Minneapolis. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Your question?
We were wondering, my question is, what age is appropriate for a child to have a cell phone?
Oh man, that's an excellent question. I think different families need to figure out for themselves what the right answer for that question is. Sometimes families want kids to have like a watch or something like that where a child can text or communicate with a couple different people. There's different products out there. Some families want children to have a phone, maybe like a flip phone or something like that, that allows them to text, that allows them to send and receive calls but doesn't have apps. You know, some families want to have a full-on iPhone. They want to lock it down. And so there's only certain apps that children can use and for certain times a day. Some people are just kind of fine just like buying a phone and giving it to their kids. I think we need to recognize that if we are handing our kids a smartphone, we need to be very aware of all the issues going on, all the risks that are being posed. And man, I could probably spend another hour just talking about kind of leaving our kids alone to experience the internet on their own. Knowing all the things that I do, I spend time with my kids, with them, you know, when they're on the internet. I spend time with them when we are watching shows together and things like that. And I think you can do a really good job kind of building rapport with our kids, playing Mario Kart with them and playing Minecraft with them and Roblox and things like that. But I think families need to be very, I think families, parents absolutely need to educate themselves about the risks of just handing a smartphone to their children and kind of think for themselves, are my children able to manage these risks on their own? I think some kids are more likely to be able to do that. Some kids are less likely. And I think that when we've kind of figured those things out, that is, that's the key question. It's not so much an age, are the risks and our children's ability to manage those risks and maybe the parents' ability to set up some guardrails, are those all in a place where it's safe for my child to have a smartphone?
It's interesting because when I have a 30-year-old and when he was about 13, he wrote me a contract out, handwritten, that he would get this grade, he would do that in order to get a phone.
I think that's a really good idea, that phones are kind of a conditional device or condition that the phone, I've heard a lot of people say the parents own the phone, the kids can use the phone, or the primary caregivers can own the phone and the kids can use the phone, but certain things need to be met. You know, if someone's missing practice, if they're missing work, if they're missing school, if they're not behaving and, you know, all kinds of other things, you know,
that, not doing their chores.
Right. Yeah. That the phone kind of goes away, This is a privilege, not a right. And I think it's hard, and I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff out there trying to reinforce this idea to teenagers that, you know, you deserve a phone and things like that. But I think parents are in charge, and I think
sometimes. Sometimes parents are in charge.
Well, I think parents absolutely are in charge of, you know, who gets to influence their kids. And when you give them a phone, there are a flood of people who are absolutely trying to influence your kids. Mm-hmm. And you get to be in charge. Those people on the who are trying to reach your kids through the various apps and communities online, they are not in charge. Parents and primary caregivers are in charge.
And if you've ever watched kids, young kids, watch TV, it is absolutely like they can be having a full-on hissy fit and turn the TV on.
Absolutely.
And they go, bleh. They just shut them down.
There's a reality that for probably about 20 years old now, there's an organization called Child's Play, which was actually funded by a lot of Silicon Valley folks. But they put video games in hospitals because when kids need to have procedures that weren't fun, if they had to get shots and things like that, if you have them playing Nintendo or Xbox or something like that, they are paying attention to that, and they are not even noticing that they're getting these shots. So, yes, there's a profound anesthetizing property to these screens, and it's only gotten stronger as video games have gotten more sophisticated.
Wow. 651-461-9226. This person writes, I miss the days when you'd call your friend on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody answers anymore.
Yeah, that's an issue. And I'm 46 years old, and there's definitely people that I call. And if there are people in my address book and I see that they're calling me, and I'm available, I'll take the call. The world is changing. The world is absolutely changing, yeah.
This texter writes, I gave up all social media. It's evil, manipulative, waste of time, very little truth, and an open invitation to many evils. Wow.
Yeah, it's a mess. I think there are some really positive things about the internet and social media and these games. And I think when people are using them in healthy ways, that's great. I don't suggest that people abandon technology. I don't think that's realistic. But I think being very thoughtful and using it in moderation and using it in ways that are beneficial to us is really important.
And we talked about that as we sort of come to the end of the hour here. It really does come down to moderation, as you say, and awareness. And I mentioned, you know, I do love to play solitaire and my word game, and solitaire particularly before I go to sleep. I have a routine. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it has taken the place of reading a book.
Yes, there's a lot of research that shows that screen use has kind of pushed out reading books, yeah.
So what did you say? Live with feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that
I hate that.
Right, no, we don't. Our brains, one of the other things, I talked a little bit before about our brains like predictability. Our brains don't like distress, but it is important if we're kind of like, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable, I'm going to grab my phone. Being thoughtful, and it's usually not that. It's like, I'm feeling uncomfortable, and like, I'm going to, you know, look at this website or look at this or play this app. You know, kind of like recognizing, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable, I'm going to wait 15 seconds before I grab my phone. It's kind of like a muscle. You know, if you kind of exercise that muscle, it's like, oh, I'm feeling a little bit of distress, but it's not actually bothering me. When we get to the point where anytime we feel any kind of distress, we have to grab our phone, which we, you know, carry with us all the time. That kind of builds that dependence. That kind of builds that reaction. So have a harder and harder time to deal with the stress. And distress is unfortunately part of life. But if we can manage it in lots of different ways, including being able to sit with it for a little bit, we are going to be a lot less susceptible to screen addiction.
Well, this has been a marvelous hour. And do you see patients?
I do, yep. Okay. I see patients Monday through Thursday at Alina, and I have an ADHD and autism testing practice on Fridays.
Okay, very good. So you see the gamut.
I do.
And social media is a part of what you see.
I bet every single day I'm talking to people who are struggling with social media use, yeah.
And they're mostly children or young adults?
I see primarily children and young adults, but I do work with adults too. But I would say everybody. It's probably more kind of 20-somethings and teenagers. The teenagers I talk to, social media isn't as much of a deal, but definitely the 20-somethings and adults, I'm seeing more kind of awareness of social media issues, yeah.
And the issues being not being able to put it down, feeling bad about themselves because they don't measure up,
the comparison,
et cetera.
Absolutely.
And if you feel like you're in trouble, again, you said resources. I think 988, is a number
absolutely
to call if you're feeling like you're out of control.
Yeah, 988 is a national mental health hotline. You can call or text, and there are very good people who are available to talk to people, both over the phone or over text. So that's a fantastic resource. If you are in the Twin Cities, I always recommend contacting a mental health provider at Alina or wherever you see your primary care physicians. I think there's some things the United States does really well, some things we don't do as well. Mental health is not something we do very well. But I think a lot of times people don't realize if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling overwhelmed, if I'm feeling anxious, there are people who are trained to help with these things. And those are mental health care providers. They can help.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate your time. And
thank you for having me.
Logan, thanks for coming in. And Ryan, you're getting kudos for playing. Love the music choices today. The texter writes,
amen.
Great to hear those wonderful sounds. We will take a break here. It's about 7:57, and I'll do some news, and then we'll have our money show coming up right after this.